Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, October 8th, 2011. My name is Marcia Mary Baker, and our topic for today is the Great Pacific Alliance on the 100th anniversary of the Republican Revolution in China. Now, our guests are both speaking to us. We have them on the line from San Francisco in California on the Pacific Rim, and I'm very glad to welcome them, Allie Parabakovsky. Welcome, Allie.
Hello, Marcia.
Good connection. Hi. And Allie speaking with us from LaRouche Political Action Committee there, and especially she's helping lead the charge with the Summer Shields for Congress campaign, which is part of the slate of six in the nation that's putting forward the critical policies right now for here and for the world. And I am also glad to welcome Lainey Rubenstein. Hi.
Hi.
And Lainey, who is often in California and has been back and forth across the Pacific to China. You never know where Lainey is. But she is also our EIR online, EIR News Service correspondent for the United Nations, where she has been recently, I think, and is, however, out in California for many reasons, kicking up a fuss right now in a good way. Now, what I want to just say at the beginning, by way of introduction to our discussion, is as our title indicates, there are certain universal principles that we need to be thinking about explicitly, directly right now. They are involved in what happened in China 100 years ago, not just then, but the great figure of Sun Yat-sen and other aspects which our guests can get into. But this has everything to do with our own role and responsibility in shaping history today. And we have a continuing pressing opportunity and a potential to shift policy right now in Washington, D.C., but it's not an open-ended time frame affair. We're very much at the end of the system, this monetarist system, this kind of monetarist imperial neo-British Empire situation. We see that in many ways, and it's a question of hours and days for some complete chain reaction explosion kind of thing, but the disintegration is underway. And that means we have danger, too, not just opportunity to make the shift. And I want to pass along what Mr. LaRouche said just a few hours ago about that. But on the breakdown front, I'll just mention a couple of things from the transatlantic sphere right now, that the valves are opening completely with pouring funny money out to bankrupt banks, financial interests in the transatlantic, in Europe, in the United States, and so forth. The European Central Bank, the Central Bank of Britain, has made these announcements. They're going ahead with, the polite term is quantitative easing, but it's really a hyperinflationary worldwide kind of version of what happened in the Weimar period, 1923 in Germany. But this is the end of the line. Tim Geithner is still running loose. Obama's still in the White House. So the point about this is that the situation we have is, Mr. LaRouche was pointing out, be on alert for an intervention by the enemy forces doing this kind of thing to conduct a Hitler-style coup, a purge of people, a move to have certain forces or individuals disappear. Why? To offset the breakdown impact on these enemy circles. It's not as if it's just come up. I won't spend more time on it now. We may in upcoming shows, but Mr. LaRouche has pointed out, he mentioned this at a staff briefing this morning, that in recent decades, at the time, say, of the first Mr. Bush presidency, when Mr. Cheney was around then and then he was around later, that there was a potential for making a hit on the United States in this way by enemy forces. But Bill Clinton came in. That couldn't happen, it didn't happen under him. but it doesn't mean the danger's gone away. For certain reasons now, it's more intense. So everyone, I'm just stressing that. You can be watching the EIR online site, that is where you're listening, LaRouchePub.com. Certainly watch LaRouche's Political Action Committee, LaRouchePAC.com. And on there, you'll also find, within the next 24 hours, a newly completed paper by Mr. LaRouche. It's called Three Steps to Recovery. He's finishing finally editing now. And more on what I just described about the danger alert. So on the other side, that is the side of humanity, we also are seeing a tremendous outpouring on the streets in the United States and elsewhere of outrage against what's happening. You can you can roughly talk about the Occupy Everywhere movement. Students, others, Washington D.C., New York, Los Angeles. You see people saying Wall Street has ripped off the nation. That's true. And Mr. Obama's never jailed one banker. He's just jailing everybody else. So in the midst of all this, Obama's going down. There's no question about that. And then you step outside just the United States and look at the globe from out in space, near space, and you see tremendously exhilarating moves in the Western Pacific. China's initiative in space, a recent conference on developing the Arctic, and of course, it was only 2 weeks ago that Mr. Putin and Mr. Medvedev in Russia announced a certain continuity of government positions there for 2012, which directly is associated with nation building. And that means literally new railroad commitments, nuclear power, development at the far north, the far east, Eurasia. And so our guests can get into that, but I'm only raising this right at the beginning, not to for anyone here to not to underestimate our own individual role in the United States. Each day, each week, figure out don't ask the question, when is the blowout going to come, or when is the Hitler purge going to come? That would be a pretty rotten thing to ask. The question is, what are we going to do today? When are we starting to move to do everything we can to bring about the best possible chance for civilization, and certainly to prevent the worst? So that's the vantage point from which we're talking today. And what I'd like to do is begin with our guest, Ali Perabakovsky in San Francisco, because you may want to address the strategic potential I've referred to, especially because you're organizing for a conference at the end of October. And I'm sure you have both the people you're talking to and what you want to accomplish there are part of this, what we call the Great Pacific Alliance, Ali.
Yes, Marcia. Well, what I will say is that right now, it's a beautiful time to be alive, because right now you've got really the fate of mankind is going to be determined in the very short term period for several generations or more to come. And what you're seeing and what Mr. LaRouche has been referring to over the last couple of years is you're seeing really the end of a 3,000-year-old and more system of imperialism that's really been governing mankind. And what we're in right now, what we have been in, is a real battle for what is the nature of a human individual. And what you're seeing blowing out, what you're seeing with the blowout of the so-called transatlantic system in Europe, in the United States, is the blowout of a system that says that man is nothing but an animal and a beast, and that all you can do in your life is loot other people, get pleasure, and avoid pain. And this is the system that Wall Street represents. This is the system that the City of London, the Inner Alpha group of banks represents. This is the system that we've been paying homage to for the last 40 years and more. And it's the system that says that money is worth everything, not rather than physical value. So take down your industrial production, as we've done in the United States. Take down your industry. Take down your commitment to a science and a real future of development, and instead just get your momentary pleasure. So that whole system is what we're seeing coming down very dramatically with the crisis in the euro system, especially, particularly with the now imminent default of Greece, the Greek nation, which is completely freaking out, all of the banks, et cetera. And so they're demanding more and more bailouts, more and more cash flows. Now, what people have to understand, and what I think was put really well a couple weeks ago when Mr. LaRouche really launched this Trans-Pacific Alliance, this great Trans-Pacific Alliance, was we have to see ourselves as in a war right now. Everybody who is a friend to humanity has to see themselves in a war against that outlook, that oligarchical imperial outlook that's governed us for several thousands of years. And the reason you want to reach out to the Pacific is that you have a view of man there that has been present in the United States in our greatest times. It was present when we went to the moon. It was present when we had Franklin Roosevelt launching some of the best development projects, such as the Tennessee Valley Authority, that raised the standard of living of an entire several generations. It was present under Lincoln when he defeated the British Empire for a second time in the Civil War. And that we have to reach across to these other nations that are beginning to think in terms of really that mankind must develop, that we have to cast off this monetarist system and look to physical values, rebuilding the physical productivity of our nations. And we have to enter into an alliance like a wartime alliance with them. And what LaRouche had mentioned is we have to look at it as the alliance in World War II. Franklin Roosevelt, Stalin, and Chiang Kai-shek, the Allies entering into an alliance against a common enemy of mankind. And the common enemy was fascism, but really, as Franklin Roosevelt had elaborated then, we cannot fight fascism and allow imperialism, allow the British Empire to still be around. And what you're seeing right now is we've been under an imperial system ever since the death of Franklin Roosevelt. And that system is blowing out. But the question that remains, the real strategic issue, is are we going to go down with that system? Is the United States, are the nations of the planet going to go down with the great collapse that's occurring in the financial markets? Or will we cut ourselves off from that collapse? And the policy to do that is Glass-Steagall. And then move with a completely different conception of economy, the notion of a credit system, that you're not looking for just an immediate gain of monetary funds. You're looking for projects, you're looking for developments that are actually going to create a future for coming generations. And that is actually the nature of how mankind operates. So what we're doing here in San Francisco with Summer Shields' congressional campaign, but also as the six LaRouche Democrats, is we're really bringing this strategic situation to the fore. What we're going to be doing here is we're going to hold a conference. Really, it's coming up in just a couple of weeks at the end of October. And this conference comes on the 100-year anniversary of Sun Yat-sen really leading a revolution to overthrow the imperial dynasty in China. Now, for those that don't know much, that don't know about Sun Yat-sen, and Lainey can go through this in much more detail after this, he was someone who came to the United States and was influenced both by the great ideas, the best ideas of in China, in the history of China, the best Confucius, ideas, the philosophical ideas of man, but then came to the United States and was a part of the best ideas coming from the United States. He was particularly influenced by Lincoln and Lincoln's ideas of government of, by, and for the people. And he knew that there are certain universal ideas that must be the underpinning for running a nation. And the notion of having a nation be for the general welfare of the people, of the whole of mankind, not just for a small few, that had to be the basis of any kind of future that mankind was to have. So he pretty much almost single-handedly, but really was really the father of some of the greatest potential coming out of China today. So we're saying that on this 100 years later, we need to take the best in China and the best in the United States, really the most universal ideas of man, the most universal ideas of government, and use that as the basis for real collaboration for the greatest economic development that you could possibly imagine, for space, mankind's extraterrestrial imperative, for the development of these great undeveloped territory in China, in the U.S., in Russia, in the Arctic, and for just a complete cultural transformation as well. And that we can do that today. And that power where you present where mankind really must go in the next 150 years, that is more powerful than this British imperial oligarchical outlook. And that kind of a collaboration, the U.S., Russia, and China, on those universal ideas of man is what can crush this British imperial system once and for all. That's strong enough to do it. So right now, we have to be as one-fist, many nations, but one-fist aligned as for a wartime alliance against this imperial outlook that's really coming down right now. And I think what you mentioned with the Occupy Wall Street, Occupy Everything, this is just one more evolution of the mass strike that we've seen over the last couple of years breaking out in the population. People are sick and tired of this system. They are not ready to give up their future for Wall Street or the British Empire or anything. And they're standing up, and they know what they're against in a certain sense. They know they're against the kind of injustice that's been done to us over the last 40 years. But they have to know what they have to fight for, and we have to give them an idea of what the future can actually be. So that's what I'll say right now. Maybe, and we can go through some more later, but perhaps Lainey can give an idea a little bit.
Yeah, I wanted to kind of do it, take it from a different angle and mm-hmm. look at the world just for 1 second.
Good.
Where we have a tremendous suffering. If we look around the world in Africa, certain key sections in Southeast Asia, we know how we have hunger now in the United States and the breakdown, what has been gone through already. And I want to emphasize that this is all man-made. That we, with the existing technologies in the world today, could feed 25 billion people, and 25 billion people could have the living standard of Denmark and so today. It's a political issue. It's the epistemological issue. We are in a war for mankind, so and it is that big, literally for many future generations to come, and it's coming to a point now. We are looking at either straight hell, with millions and millions escalating, dying unnecessarily, or we are also standing in front of a new epoch. There's a nice Chinese word, Wei Di, which means crisis, which is a danger and opportunity, and that's really what characterizes the situation now. And it's in that context that the Pacific Alliance and what LaRouche has launched, where he said San Francisco is the gateway, is the driving for the nation of the United States to force the development towards a Trans-Pacific alliance between Russia, China, and the United States, and then countries like India, Japan, Korea, and other nations will join very fast. So we are in an imminent danger, but also facing an opportunity. And with that, what I really would like to emphasize, because there's all this propaganda against Russia being communist, China being communist. Every time you have, I mean, every half year or year or so, you have this massive wave of propaganda in the U.S. media against China. And now with the very good developments in Russia, you have this propaganda against Putin and Russia being communist. You'll have the same propaganda from the same sources against the United States, that the United States is the empire. And what I think is absolutely crucial for people in this period is to keep their heads clear. And that is that the principles for every single human being in this world, of a number of sovereign nation states, but the principles for every single human being and for every nation in the world are the founding principles of the United States of America. And that is what America really represents. The inalienable rights of man and the general welfare and the emphasis on taking care of posterity for the future. And that is indeed what the alliance between, a natural alliance between Sun Yat-sen's China and Russia and the United States represented. These are these highest ideas about man and what Ali pointed out earlier, the nature of man, that man is precious because we can transform nature. We can conquer space. We can, with our minds and our works, provide ample opportunities for every single baby being born and not yet have been born on this globe. And this is what our responsibility as human beings are. And particularly as Americans, which has the only nation in the world which is, has this as its direct founding principles. And this is what the real America is. And that's where Sun Yat-sen comes in, because this is then also what defines what China is working to do today and why China is a natural ally of the United States. Where Sun Yat-sen, what Ali said, that he learned from the very best of Confucius, and the highest for Confucius was the question that the notion of love and love of mankind, love and the highest level, and that was the highest principle called Ren, and that the universe is always, is harmonic and is always developing, a constant development, and will never stop developing, and it's developing in a harmonic way, and it's that way that the human being relates to the universe. So he was steeped in that, but very important, what most people don't know, was that there is a direct connection between the Mayflower and the compact of the Mayflower coming to the United States in 1620 with a compact to do good and to work for the general welfare. That was the basis for how then developed, without going into a lot of details, what became the foundation for the United States. This was picked up by John Quincy Adams, John Jay, and others in forming a missionary society in 1810, with the idea to do good, not just to convert people to Christianity, but to do good. And their goal and what they did was that they recruited people from different nations to go out and to learn. Anyway, I will not go through the whole story, but suffice it to say, their thought was not only to cross the continent of the United States, but to go into Asia to counter the imperial, British imperial oligarchical intrusion there, and instead come with this founding principles and founding ideas of the United States to do good. So already in 1820s, 1830s, 1848 was excellent writings, books, and so forth about the United States and the founding principle of the United States spread inside China. praising the United States of America. They had no queens, counts, and things like that, and were building up this great continent of, that we today call America. And it was this Sun Yat-sen got hold of. So he both had the most beautiful ideas from Chinese philosophy, and he had the very best from the United States. And what he did, and what China is doing today, was to produce, as a program for peace, in 1919, he wrote a program for 100 miles of rail, water projects, building of new ports. He said, we have to build railroads from eastern China all the way to Africa, to the southern part of Africa. We have to get the nations to collaborate with each other on a mutual idea for mutual development, and that is the basis for peace. And he said in 1919, if we don't do that, we're going to have a Second World War. Most of these projects that Sun Yat-sen outlined in 1919 is what China is doing today with the Three Gorges Dam, with the building of railroads, the water transfer from the southern China to the northern China. This has nothing to do with communism. This is the American system of political economy. This is what we should be doing in the United States. And this is what China is aspiring to today. So when people start talking about the media, communism, and so forth, this is all in order to stop this incredible, important development that China is engaging in and now is engaging in together with Russia. And that we, as Americans, absolutely must, for the sake of the world, collaborate with China and Russia to begin to do in big style. We have a responsibility here in the United States for the rest of the world. We must force through this alliance and all people that consider themselves as patriotic Americans, whether they are independent republics and Democrats, have to collaborate and work with us and work with China and Russia to get this alliance through based on the principle of the general welfare and of love of mankind for the many future generations to come. And that is why this conference that we are organizing for now here in San Francisco is not just a conference in San Francisco. This has national implications for the United States as a whole, because San Francisco is the gateway into the Pacific. And it is also having very important international implications. So I would say that because Sun Yat-sen and Abraham Lincoln was like totally brothers in spirit. When Sun Yat-sen wrote this program from 1919 that I just referred to, he kept referring to Abraham Lincoln and the Transcontinental Railroad and what the Americans were doing. And we Chinese, we must do the same thing. This is what it is to be human. This is the basis for peace. This is how brothers relate to each other around the globe. And we are now in a situation where this is a global crisis, and therefore we are in the same boat, so to speak. There's not one place where we'll have a good time and then other places are going to go down. And with United States, China, and Russia aligning with each other, we have so much power that we finally can defeat the oligarchical empire, and with that, the oligarchical principle. And that is what the fight is all about. So let nobody who's listening don't get into all these stupid manipulations from the British concerning slanders and so forth. We have to act on the highest principles about man and not let us be led astray by this propaganda. So that's kind of what I had to say for the moment.
That's very good, and I'm glad you added that antidote. We saw, I hope people didn't bother watching on CNN or C-SPAN, but Obama at his Thursday press conference and otherwise in Washington, there was the usual bilge you just described about going against China as a way of the most kind of evil distraction and mischaracterization, when in fact so many things are on the move that are of great a great benefit and treasure to the world right now. And in that regard, let me ask either one of you if you want to say anything about, for our listeners, for some of the specific initiatives. I understand, beginning a couple years ago, I think Mr. Putin went to China specifically. He's going again next week, I think October 16, to China personally, and the Chinese delegation was just in Russia. And by specifics, I mean there were things ratified, such as collaboration on the floating nuclear power plants, because Russia has been building one that's going to go in the Chukotka coastline, I think, called the Lomonosov. But there's space collaboration, others. Do you want to say anything about just the content of any aspect of what's being committed to by China and Russia already?
Ali?
Yeah, I hope we're still connected. Are
you okay?
Oh, yeah, that's all right. Thanks. Ali, do you want to say anything about that?
Hi, sorry.
Yeah, that's fine. I was just saying, do you want to give any observations about the nature of any of the projects?
Well, hello?
Yes.
Hi.
Yeah, we can
hear
you.
Well, I will say there, I mean, in terms of some of what's going on, I think that the interesting thing about everything that's going on right now that I've seen in China, in Russia, and these developments, including this latest Arctic conference, I know there's a conference right now that's about to be held in 2 days on the Sakhalin Island in Russia, which is a meeting of Chinese and Russian scientists and engineers, something which is completely unprecedented. I think one of the most important things is that this is what has been called for by Mr. LaRouche for many years, that this is precisely the program and the outlook that he has talked about. The Arctic conference that just has just occurred in Russia, the development of this region, this is what we've been talking about and what's been discussed. This is really what the United States should have done. What is going on in Russia and China now is where the United States should have been. And I think all Americans need to, in a certain sense, have a certain amount of a hurt pride almost for where we could have gone as a nation had we not had the assassination of John F. Kennedy, of Bobby Kennedy, and the turning of the boomer, baby boomer generation, which had one of the most optimistic developments occurring during their lives, which is us going to the moon, turning towards this insane culture of sex, drugs, rock and roll, and free trade and freedom to take off your clothes. And I think that this, where we should have gone as a nation, is precisely where the Trans-Pacific is going right now, which is we needed to go to space. This is where China is going right now. I believe they just had the docking of their Tiangong rocket, the docking of the rockets just 2 days ago. This is where Russia is going with their space program. They're actually building a city, a science city, right now in Irkutsk, Russia, which is called the Cosmodrome. And it's a science city which is going to, which is already in the midst of training 35,000 young people who are going to be the next generation of scientists to go to space, to develop the Arctic region. And what has just occurred in this Arctic region, the main thing that was put forward was the beginnings of the development of the Bering Strait Tunnel Project, which is something that's actually been on the books for over a century. It's the connection of the United States and Russia. And it's, for people who don't know, we've discussed this a lot in this organization, but we're only, if you look at it right now, you think about Russia and China and you think, oh my God, the other side of the world, so far away, takes 20 hours to get there by plane. But if you think about it, about the Earth from the standpoint of the North Pole and the Arctic, and you take a look at a map of Earth from the Arctic,
better take a globe. Look at a globe.
Yeah, take a globe and look at it down from the Arctic region, one, you see a number of things that strike you. The first is there's not much going on there. You know, you look at the Earth at night, for example. Look at the Earth at night from the Arctic region. There's not much going on. If alien life forms were to come look at the Earth at night from the Arctic, they would probably say, oh, is there any life there? Is there any human life there? Because there's not. There's not really much development there at all, if any. So one, you see that. That strikes you. But secondly, what strikes you is just how close we actually are to our brethren across the Pacific Ocean in Asia, which is we're about 50 miles from Russia. And by rail, were we to connect our two nations, you would have, you know, really a completely different strategic center to the Earth. It would shift from the Atlantic, from the center, which right now is the British Empire, and it would shift to the Pacific, because that's where the continents would actually be connected physically, but then also culturally, I think. So this was actually put forward as the basis at this Arctic Development Conference. Right now, the building of a rail line to Irkutsk is actually part of that, because that is one of the cities that lies along this Eurasian land bridge. This is one of the cities that needs to be developed in order to get to the Bering Strait. And I know they also have the boring machine already financed that would dig the tunnel under the Bering Strait. So you're seeing an interesting thing, which is from the standpoint of Russia and China, they're moving along with an idea of where the future has to be in their minds. Now, many people have mentioned this. You can't build something like the Bering Strait simply from Russia. The United States has to be there. And the funny thing, the irony, is what Obama is doing right now in contrast to what the Russians are doing. Here the Russians are building a science city. Here they're developing the Arctic. They've held a conference where prominent Russian scientists, prominent Chinese scientists, prominent even American scientists were there, looking at the development of this region. And they're getting ready to build a tunnel under the Bering Strait. Now, Obama, on the other hand, is pushing immediately, right now, actually, for the building of a national park right where our connection to the Bering Strait tunnel would have to be. So he's actually pushing to completely, through the so-called cry of environmental protection, he's pushing to halt at the pass one of the greatest, most strategic developments in the history of mankind. What could be one of the greatest, most strategic developments? So it just goes to show the type of outlook represented by this president is not in the interest of the United States. It's not in the interest of humanity.
Right. I guess, and our guest, Lainey, our Danish guest, you can be hyphenated too, Lainey, but it's an insult against Bering, right? This park is supposed to be called Beringia, and it's the World Wildlife Foundation and all that greeny genocidal gang wants the Beringia Park to prevent just the great network of the world for humanity that Allie was just discussing.
No, I also think that, you had earlier, you had Sun Yat-sen, Witte Radenau and others, but particularly those guys, studying the German-American Friedrich List on national economy, and were working very intensely to figure out at that time to carry out the idea of what had been governing in the United States under Abraham Lincoln to build great transport corridors through the land masses. And then at the same time, in the year 1900, which is similar today, I got to think about it when Ali mentioned Obama and this stupid national park, because in the year 1900, Adam Brooks writes on behalf of the British Empire, he says, because they saw these developments at that time for developing the landmass, and Adam Brooks writes, we must make sure that the land people, that the Europeans and the Chinese, the Asians, never succeed in developing the land which is between them, because then we, the ocean-faring nations, will have lost our power forever. And this is exactly what was Lincoln knew was so important to connect the United States and make it one nation. We had the Trans-Siberian Railroad, and now what Ali mentioned, what I also found was fascinating, namely that China has been going west and is really developing the western part of China, where there was not really anything on the other side. But the reason they're developing the western part of China is with the idea of continuing to go towards Europe in a development, and not just contain themselves in an isolated way, but really developing this furthest western part of China. So with that said, this is, Obama is a puppet of the British. The environmentalists are puppets of the British, totally against development for an environment for human beings. So they're not really for the environment, they're for death.
Yeah.
One thing, Lainey, I will say on that, in Sun Yat-sen's book, The International Development of China, which you've mentioned, what's really interesting is he actually elaborates this principle, because right now, when people think of developing regions or they think of building a railroad, and he says it, when people think of building a railroad, they think, oh, what's the most profitable route? And they think, ah, yes, the most profitable route is between two very populated cities, and therefore you get, you know, the money and et cetera. But he completely crushes that, and he says, well, no, actually, the most profitable thing, if you think about real value, not in the immediate term, but real value, is actually building rail to where you have the least development or no development at all, because rail can be seen almost as a trailblazer of development, that you're going to take these areas, which are considered the frontier, and to them you're gonna bring your rail, you're gonna need to bring your communication system, you're gonna need to bring your energy system, you're gonna create new cities. You're completely transforming the capability of man and your nation to develop even more and to do more, because you've got you're opening up a new territory, you're opening up the resources in that territory, you're opening up the capability to have more people at a higher standard of living, connected to each other, more discoveries going through along the way, along the route, because you have more of a communication line between them. And you're really creating the conditions for what LaRouche terms a platform of development. And this really is the way that the American system developed. This is what Lincoln knew with the Transcontinental Railroad. This is really what's embodied in something like a space mission as well. And this is what's embodied in the Arctic right now. So if you look at the current proposal to build the Bering Strait Tunnel, the so-called monetary accountant will tell you, oh, well, there is no real value to that. Why would you build something out there in the Arctic?
Yeah, with the caribous, there's nothing there, right?
Yeah, why would
that? I have another example, which Ali will know very well, because Ali is actually working very intense now to do an animation of Sun Yat-sen's development program.
Oh,
and one
wow.
of the things, just in connection with what she just said, everybody thinks about the Himalayas and Tibet and Lhasa mm-hmm. as a godforsaken place, mm-hmm. way up there, way out there where there is nothing. But Sun Yat-sen did not only have an idea about one railroad to Lhasa, which the Chinese actually completed in 2008, in permafrost and so forth. No, Sun Yat-sen had a number of railroads that should go from Lhasa and to all spread to all kinds of different directions from Lhasa, exactly around the principle that Ali just outlined, which is kind of mm-hmm. funny, because it's a bit similar to the Arctic. Here you have the Himalayas, and what could we do if we actually mm-hmm. create the platform for development there? I mean, what could we do with this area? It's quite fascinating, also concerning water management, apart from mineral development and so forth, we can do fantastic things up there.
Right. I'm thinking you two bring things to mind. One thing you mentioned, hurt pride in the process, that Americans should rightly feel that way for what they should have been doing. But after Franklin Delano Roosevelt's vice president, Henry Wallace, of course, who was also agriculture secretary for a while, but when he was sent to Eastern Eurasia, to the Soviet Union, and he went via Alaska, his writing when he came back asserted, it was approved by FDR, the president, that once the war was over, the new frontier for the entire world would be what he called the Far North. And he had a program, he wanted to create a council of the Far North to also look at what agriculture could be done up there, given that you have 3 months of full sunshine and then 9 months not. And this kind of thing was on the agenda among the, as normal, as opposed to then the globalization and greenyism setting in. The other thing you mention about, both of you, about what Sun Yat-sen put forward, what he studied, the principles, the many of us forget that when the U.S. was spanned by the first railway across the West and the Golden Spike was put in and so forth, simultaneously, all the other networks, like the home state of Henry Carey, which is Pennsylvania, they were intensifying their local railroads. You had many, many more local rail stops. So farmers in the most remote areas of the Northeast states, Laney, you know what they're like, could send their children to school by rail. So all of that then was taken down in the takedown under the advance of the retrograde British Empire in the 20th century. But so you've painted quite a picture of what we can look at.
I wanted to add one more thing, because I know that this has been brought up at the LaRouche Show many times, but I think we should make sure we put in the context, too, that the Trans-Pacific Alliance also, and the building of the Bering Strait connection, should also be seen that we are going to build the North American water and management. What is it called?
Power lines, right?
Power lines,
right?
Where we will have the greatest comprehensive building of water management, processing of mining, fast speed rail, new cities, dams, in the history of mankind. And if you combine that with the absolute necessity of developing the Arctic and the whole of Siberia, you can see what an uplift of for mankind as a whole through what you just mentioned, Marcia, what it took off for the eastern part of the United States with the Transcontinental Railroad. When we make, and this is just a decision, this Navapa was already planned out in the 60s in connection with the us going to the moon. It's a total American program. So when we do this in connection with what China is doing now, what the Russians' intentions are, and they want collaboration around developing the Arctic, they will collaborate with us in a major upsurge of building this largest ever done in North America, spanning all the way from Alaska down to Mexico. The collaboration around this will just escalate the developments with a breathtaking speed. And then people can begin to see how from hell we can look at a new epoch right there in front of our faces in our lifetime. Even if we are in our 60s and 70s, we could see it take off. With a very fast speed. And this is America, and that is human, and that is the alternative to the Wall Street, City of London, killing and genocide and intentions that is taking place right now. And that's why, okay, Obama is the way out, but we should help in any way so it goes as fast as possible to kick the guy out so we can start, he's a puppet, and so we can start to build for mankind. And that's what this conference up here is all about. People should think in terms of it if they want to fly out, if they're not on the West Coast, and participate with ideas, because this is the thrust that Lynn and the responsibility Lynn put out there, Linda LaRouche put out there, namely for San Francisco to be the gateway and to be the driver for this. But this is part of the United States as a whole and of the Pacific as a whole, and this effort as a whole to create a platform for mankind as a whole in this immediately in this century.
Yes, thank you. And let's stress this. I think it's the specifics. It's October 29, right, Ali?
Yes.
And it's, please look, everyone, on LaRouchePack.com. Look under, click on events. And absolutely, October 29, people should relate to that as a U.S.-based but world strategic event. And in that connection, everything that Ali and Lainey, I'm addressing our audience, have been talking about is, I mean, with this, I said there's people are in the streets on Occupy everywhere, Occupy Boston, Occupy Nevada, that isn't, I'm not exaggerating, and it's the time and opportunity for people to literally physically activate and give more financially and in resources of all kinds than ever before, because the agenda, the time frame is not months and years. It is days and weeks, even hours, the rate things are happening, both good and bad. And the danger I mentioned at the beginning for Mr. LaRouche from his evaluation, as he stressed this morning, is the enemy has had the intention for some time and now has the circumstances and is giving indication of moving on attempting a coup, attempting a Hitler-style intervention because of the pace of the breakdown and so forth. So do you want to say anything more at the conference, Ali or Eleni?
Just that it's what we've got right now is a very exciting potential opening up precisely because of the type of breakdown crisis that's coming on, and because people are seeing it as their own imperative that they need to not only be spectators and watching other people act or watching this system break down, but they need to actually fight to make what we're doing happen. And I think I really like what Sun Yat-sen had said once, which is that the mind is the beginning of everything that happens in the universe. And I think more and more it's very clear that what's happening right now with the breakdown that's occurring in the transatlantic system, with the poverty that Lainey was going through in Africa, the drugs in South America, all of these things, this is highly unnatural. This is not the nature of man. This is not what humanity does when it's functioning correctly. We don't destroy ourselves. We don't have people starving in the streets. What is natural is the program that Sun Yat-sen put forward, that the best parts of the American system and what we were founded on illustrated, and what we are pushing, what LaRouche is pushing, what the six LaRouche Democrats are pushing, and what we're going to put forward in this Congress, in this conference, which is that man is not only the most natural part of the universe, but is the human mind is the nature and the beginning of everything that happens in it. Change, the development of man, that is the actual nature of how the universe operates. And we have to finally cast off this British environmentalist yoke that says mankind should be small and sustainable, so-called, and we have to actually fight for what's our rightful role as being creators, co-creators in the universe. That's what we're going to be discussing, and that is the most strategic issue to be put forward today.
Right.
And it will be under the banner of Chen Xia Wei Gong,
yes,
which comes from Confucius, and Sun Yat-sen used it all the time, because it means that the world belongs to everybody. This is the way, the Chinese way of describing the principle of the general welfare. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is exactly what Ali outlined.
Right.
The importance of the human mind. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you, in the, you can say anything you like in the final minutes. It's not, we still have some, but let me ask you this. Do you want to say anything about the response of people? Let me put it this way, Ali. I know for months and months and months, speaking of the North American Water and Power Alliance, you've had outreach to sometimes people of the older generation who've been in the wings, who have skills, but weren't mobilized to do anything about the tunnels, the building, or young people who absolutely want a future. And do you want to speak about the response to your organizing, including, now this is the second part, you're also in the tectonically active part of the world with volcanism, with seismic events. One just occurred, I think, up near Vancouver in that subduction zone, an earth, a quake. You know, instead of taking it lying down, are people responding to you where you can reach out with, you know, probably with great relief that we can start to use our minds again?
Well, people respond to these ideas. They respond to these highest ideas of man and nature. And they no longer want to just hear about, you know, what's going on with the financial system. They no longer want to hear about just any of the particulars of what's going on with this political party or that political party, or the immigrants are doing this or that, or whatever people are hearing are fed in the media.
Uh-huh.
What people are responding to, and the only thing that they're going to fight for, and I mean really fight for in this period, because remember, they're losing everything. And more than just physical things, they're losing their ability to actually be immortal, to have that kind of a future. So the only thing they're going to respond to is these ideas of what mankind has to be, where mankind has to go in the universe. And I think in terms of having people here be in the seismically active region, it highlights it all the more as you're seeing these earthquakes occurring, et cetera. You're seeing these natural disasters occurring all over the East Coast and the Midwest. And people know that this, the way that we've been doing things, it can't go on for much longer. It's already broken. And if we want to survive and see mankind not only survive but really flourish, we have to go with what LaRouche has been saying for over 50 years. There's a real opening right now. But the main thing I would highlight is people have to fight. They really have to take it as a subjective challenge. We cannot just be spectators at this time. People have to fight for this future. They have to fight for the North American Water and Power Line. It's not just going to happen. It should, but it's not, because we have an enemy of mankind. So we have to fight for a vision of the future, which means you have to know where mankind has to go in the next 50 to 100 years. And that's what you're seeing. You're seeing that this Chinese community has a certain vision of the future. The Russians have a certain vision of the future. Americans, we lost our vision over the last 40 years, but we can get it back because it's in our blood, it's in our bones, it's in what this nation was founded on. And frankly, we're all human, so we can all respond to that. And that's what people should be organizing around, is the highest ideas of mankind, NAWAPA, this kind of collaboration around the Bering Strait, around space. That's man. It's not cringing like some insect or some foul bacteria that should be stamped out, as Prince Philip and the British say. Man is really a divine being.
Do you want
and therefore it's lawful that in a couple of decades we will celebrate the colonizing of Mars, and we will celebrate it with a chorus of Europeans, Chinese, Russians, and Americans performing Beethoven's Ninth Symphony.
Yes.
Yes, I like that.
Yes, I think they're getting ready in Argentina. We had two friends on here last week with the thrust there. It just illustrates the great potential if the U.S. is kicked back into life, right?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a great yearning for that, and you can feel it. It's there, as you say, it's in the bones, it's in the air, it's in the... And, well, I guess with that, there couldn't be a better call to become human again here, and that means fight like hell and have a wonderful time, and that's what we have to do. The danger is great, but the opportunity is great. And I thank you so much. I hope one of you or both or your colleagues will be on after the conference you're having October 29. And so I guess what I want to do is thank Ali Parabakovsky. Thank you, Lainey Rubinstein, and this will end our show October 8th, 2011. I will say October 15th seems to be a day of great in-the-streets action from Melbourne, Australia to Orange County, California, just in terms of the ongoing wave of mobilization in the world. So we will see be on the show October 15th. Thank you very much. This is the end for October 8th.